Hello, I'm Martha Plimpton. I'm in today for Leonard Lopate. When Whitney Joyner and Alicia Abbott first met, neither had ever met anyone else who had lost a parent to AIDS, but that's what had happened to them. Both of their fathers died of AIDS, both in 1992, and although they shared this event in common, their experiences and their father's experiences were quite different. And one thing the two women knew for certain was that there had to be more people like them out there. So they created the Recollectors, an online community for the children of parents who have died of AIDS. The site also aims to expand the history of AIDS in the United States by collecting these personal stories. The site launched this summer after a successful Kickstarter campaign. Whitney is also a senior features editor at Marie Claire magazine, and Alicia is the author of Fairyland, a memoir of my father. I'm very pleased to welcome both Whitney Joyner and Alicia Abbott to the Leonard Lopate Show today. Hello.
Hi. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much for being here. So how and when did you two meet? How old were you?
I met Alicia's then boyfriend, now husband, at my first job at Inside.com when I was in my early 20s. And at the time, my father's story was something that... you know, I told a few people, but it was always kind of wrapped up in, like, how are they going to react? Are they going to be okay with it? And Jeff, her husband, we were out one night, and he and I had mentioned it, and he said, "Oh, my girlfriend's father died of AIDS too," and I was just blown away that there was someone else out there who had that same story, because I had lived my whole life thinking I was the only person, knowing there had to be other people, but not having met anyone else.
And Alicia, what was that realization like for you when you finally got in touch with Whitney?
Well, I was about 30 years old, and I had had an experience of private grief over my father, but I had met a lot of people who had gay mothers or fathers, because I had been involved with some children of gay parents groups, but meeting someone who had also lost a father to AIDS and to meet someone who lost their dad the same year as I lost my dad, you know, Whitney and I had a lot to talk about.
And what was it like to talk about it?
I'm having a hard time remembering that first lunch, Alicia. We've had so many conversations over the years, and every time we did have a lunch early on, and then we started talking more when Alicia was working on her beautiful memoir, Fairyland, and there was just always this feeling, even though our stories are so different, Alicia's father was out in San Francisco, a poet, my father was in the closet in Kentucky, never came out, but there was still this feeling of so much commonality, that we had gone through living through this disease that had been so stigmatized in our culture and carried so much political and socio-political weight, that even though we were young, I was younger than Alicia, you know, when our fathers were sick, that still, you know, it's something that you would see on the news constantly, and that that's something that you take in as a child.
Did you find... Go ahead.
Sorry. I was just going to say that the experience of writing my book was an eye-opening experience, because I did a lot of research in that process and really came to see that losing a loved one to AIDS wasn't just something that happened to me, but it happened to thousands and thousands of people. And after I published my book, I started to hear from young men and women who'd lost parents, and I knew that Whitney was out there, and I decided to talk with Whitney because 2012 was the 20-year anniversary of my dad's death, and I knew it was also the anniversary of her father's death. And we just knew that there must be so many other people out there who are facing this anniversary and maybe sort of wondering about how to integrate that history with their lives, because we know, and I came out when I was researching my book, that in 1992, AIDS was the leading cause of death for men aged 18 to 45. And so a number of those men had to also be fathers. It just made sense.
Mm-hmm. So, Whitney, what's it been like for you to talk about your father out loud? You mentioned that you grew up in suburban Kentucky, where it might have been, well, probably definitely was difficult to talk about these types of things. And it took you a long time to start writing about him.
That's true. This has been the first year that I have, and Alicia has helped me so much with that process, because she has done so much writing herself and has written her book. And I think that it's been, you know, for, you know, so we've created this community now. We have about 70 to 80 recollectors. When we first started this project, it was just us, you know, and we didn't know what the reaction was going to be. Now we have about 80. And I think it's been, when I first started writing some pieces around the project, I was very anxious. I was very nervous. I'll just, you know, be honest about that. And Alicia made this wonderful point, which of course is very obvious. You know, we can't ask other people to write if you're not, you know, writing about your story. And it actually has been so wonderful and opening for my family. It's been something that we've talked about this year in a way that we never have, and has felt, I feel personally, like it's been a process of integration for me. It's no longer like it's just me and my dad separate away and something that I kind of close off. But now there's been a process of integration for me that that has just never happened before.
And you and your brother had been waiting for him in waiting rooms at doctor's appointments for a long time before you found out. How and when did you find out that your father was HIV positive?
We found out in April of 1992 that he was HIV positive, and then he died in September of 1992. So there were only 5 months in between, and most of those 5 months he was in the hospital.
Right.
So it was very fast. He had been HIV positive for many years, but he and my mother had kept that a secret.
And was that, by that point, were you able to talk with him about it, or did he remain a little bit closed off?
Yes, he didn't want to. It wasn't something that we could. It wasn't really something we could talk about. There were a couple of moments. I remember watching the Democratic National convention with him in August of 92, and I remember being in our living room, and he's there with his, you know, he was attached to his, you know, he's got the
IVs,
oxygen, and
oxygen.
You know, yeah, and there was that beautiful speech. Alicia, you'll remember who it was, but it was Elizabeth. I can't remember the beautiful AIDS activist who spoke at that convention, and she was talking about needing more money for AIDS research, and he started crying. And I remember that was really the kind of the only time in that those whole 5 months that he kind of even just that he even really kind of connected his disease with something, with the fact that it was a larger issue out in the world.
The Recollector site mentions that having a parent die of AIDS is often an isolating experience. Can you speak to that, Alicia? Why is that?
Well, you know, my story is very different, of course, from Whitney's, where her father was closeted. Mine was out. My mm-hmm. dad, I was aware, you know, he was gay before I was born. He was bisexual, and for me, it wasn't a memory of finding out he was gay so much as it was a memory of finding out that not everyone had a gay dad, or that having a gay dad was unusual. And he was also pretty open with me. I found out in college that he was HIV positive. He told me via letters. And even though I was living in San Francisco, it's where I grew up, and it's a very liberal community, especially compared to, say, rural Kentucky, I still felt I couldn't talk about it. I felt in that era, there really wasn't any visibility for gay parents. And when AIDS was in the headlines, there was a lot of panic around it because there was so little understanding. Mm-hmm. And I was scared because I didn't know really how my friends would react. And so I just chose to compartmentalize my life and be open about with my father and his community, but be closed in my own. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it just shows you even in liberal communities, there was still a feeling of isolation. And a lot of that just came out of the fact that I didn't know anyone who could really relate with what I was going through.
Mm-hmm. You graduated from college a semester early so you could go home and become his sole caretaker. So how were you able to cope during that time? Did you have any kind of support system, or were you very isolated in that during that period?
Well, I graduated school, and I moved from New York City back to San Francisco and into the Haight-Ashbury apartment where we had grown up together, where I had grown up with him. And he made a point of trying to connect me with some different support groups, and I did join one that was called Care for Caregivers. And in the group of 10, there was only one other woman who was taking care of an ex-husband. Everyone else was a man taking care of a friend or an ex-lover mm-hmm. or a current partner, and there were no other children. And everyone was sort of kind to me. I mean, I felt some support, but I also felt that, you know, I also was 21 years old and just wanted to be going out on Hate Street and going out in bars and being mm-hmm. as irresponsible yeah. and having as much fun as everyone else. And I, you know, every night I went out, I had to come home and you know, make sure my father was taking his medications and make sure that, you know, he was able to be fed. And
it was all on you. Were you an only child? So it all kind of rested on your shoulders.
Yes, I was an only child, and my father didn't have a close relationship with his family. Mm. And he didn't have a long-term partner, so it fell to me. I mean, there were some of his friends. It was really amazing, you know, if you look back on that period, the gay community in New York and San Francisco and a lot of other places really had to learn to take care of itself. And so there were some friends of my father's who would occasionally drop by with groceries or might bring books to read to my father, because by that point he had CMV retinitis and he couldn't see anymore, and he was an avid reader. He was a writer. And so, you know, we weren't completely alone, but I didn't feel that there were peers, or, you know, I could talk with my friends, but no one could really understand. And so even for me, in the aftermath, after he died, for a long time, I just felt swallowed up by the grief. And it really took, you know, it's now been 2 decades since he died, but where I could say, you know, this isn't a story that just happened to me. There are so many stories like this out there, and I had the opportunity to tell mine, but these other stories should also be heard.
Mm-hmm. You said you wore your dad's favorite leather jacket to his funeral, and you've written about your relationship to your father's clothing. Do you still wear his clothes, or what are your favorite pieces of his clothing? Can you talk about what that's about?
Well, I did just do an event for World AIDS Day, or on World AIDS Day in New York, and I wore his leather jacket on a train from Boston, where I live, out to New York, and it was the first time I had worn the jacket since the year that he died. And it, you know, it was for my dad and a lot of men of his generation, the sort of leather motorcycle jacket was the uniform, and I felt very close to him wearing it. A lot of his clothes are too delicate or out of style now for me to wear around.
Don't worry, they'll come back into style very soon. I have a feeling everything that, you know, it all comes back around again. I'm Martha Plimpton in for Leonard Lopate, and I'm speaking with Whitney Joyner and Alicia Abbott, the creators of The Recollectors. How did you guys come up with the name of the site? You say The Recollectors aims to expand the history of AIDS in the U.S. So mm-hmm. how did the name come to you, and how do you intend to expand that history?
Well, we thought about a lot of different names. The Recollectors itself was something that was suggested by a friend of ours, but we loved it because we loved the idea of recollecting these stories about our parents that we had perhaps been asked by our families to forget, that our culture had asked us to forget, that you know, AIDS in general has been swept under the rug in a lot of different ways. I think, you know, by the time the cocktail came around, there was this kind of collective like assumption of like, this isn't a problem anymore. We don't have to think about this anymore. And I think for a lot of us, of course, it is still in our lives. And so the idea of recollecting, re-remembering, bringing together these stories and just taking a stance and saying these people were here and they meant something felt very powerful.
Mm-hmm. You were both coping with these illnesses of your parents and then their deaths at a time when AIDS was dominating the media and which it doesn't so much right now, even though it maybe should, probably should. How did you react when it would come up in conversation, or when you'd see something in the culture or the news or, say, a movie or whatever? How did you find yourselves responding to that?
I think we had different reactions,
yes.
Whitney and I.
Right, yes. Alicia, I'm not sure. Yeah, I'll take this first. For me, I, you know, I was living in a small town outside of Kentucky. I have very vivid memories of Philadelphia. Philadelphia came out right after my dad died.
The film with Tom Hanks.
The film with Tom Hanks, yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. Right after both of our fathers died. And I remember when that movie came out, the trailers coming out and just seizing up and just feeling panicky and so filled with anxiety, feeling so compelled to see it, wanting to be in that space with someone in that story, mm-hmm. that someone else had experienced that, even if it's in this, you know, a Hollywood rendition. And also feeling like I had no idea how I could ever actually see a movie like that alone or with anyone else. And I eventually did watch it alone, as many of our recollectors have talked about, watching these kinds of films alone because they just didn't know.
They're not sure how they're going to respond, and they're not sure they want to share that response with others.
Yeah.
And what about you, Alicia?
Well, for me, because when my father died, I didn't have any siblings, and my mother died when I was 2.5. I felt like he was my whole family, and my whole world sort of evaporated. And there wasn't anyone who was telling me, you know, don't think about this, don't talk about this. It was really what I had to talk about. And so as I wore my dad's leather jacket, I sort of wore, you know, the history and the grief as like a badge of honor. It was one of the first things I might even tell people, even if they didn't relate. It was something that I really wanted to stay connected with him. And so for me as well, like, Philadelphia was a painful movie to see, but later on, looking at, you know, documentaries about the AIDS crisis, and documentaries about queer history, I felt this powerful sense of connection.
Yes.
I think because I missed my father, I really wanted to understand the world that he knew and the experience of his culture. People might take pride in their Italian heritage. I have always felt a sort of pride in my queer heritage. I mm-hmm. identify as straight. I have kids. I live on the surface what's a really straight life, but I grew up in a gay world, and it's something that mm-hmm. I missed. And so I found myself really drawn to media and drawn to the queer community, but sometimes feeling a little too straight for that community, or how do I really belong here? You know, I grew up always a little too straight for the queer community, and maybe a little too queer for the straight community.
Right, right. And I feel a little opposite. It was a very straight upbringing, and I identify as straight, but I went to an all-female college. I studied queer theory and sexual politics. This has always been a kind of mission for me around sexual freedom and sexual expression, and I'm sure that has a lot to do with the fact that my father was not able to express who he was.
Right,
and I just wanted to add, you know, that's why it's so powerful to have the recollectors, because here is a community that I very clearly, these are people who completely understand my experience. There's so many members of our community who sort of, when they lost, say, a gay dad, they felt cut off from his world and didn't know how to kind of find themselves back into that culture, yet still feeling a strong identity. So now that's something that we all share. Mm-hmm. So it's mm-hmm. been wonderful.
Yeah, it's been really incredible to meet these other people, to hear all of their different, diverse stories. We feel, both Alicia and I feel, a real eagerness not only to connect with everybody within our community that we've met so far, which is around 80 and more coming all the time, but also to get those stories out publicly on our site. And again, we just don't know how the numbers in general. Mm-hmm. We know, as Alicia mentioned, in 1992, that was a leading cause of death. We know that 650,000 people have died of AIDS altogether in the United States. And then in 92, there was a study that in the Journal of American Medical, the Journal of the American Medical Association, that found that they estimated that by 95, 46,500 children and teens will have lost their mothers to mm-hmm. HIV and AIDS. So there's just no... As far as we've found, there seems to be no kind of general, here are the numbers. We know exactly how many people there are who have lost parents. And so to us, just the numbers alone have made this a family issue.
And I suppose that's helpful in sort of countering any kind of misconceptions there might be about the types of people who die of AIDS. Mm-hmm. And have you found that people have been surprised there's so many children like you two out there?
I have found that absolutely. So many people, when we first started this project, so many people said, I never even thought about this. I never thought about this community. I never thought about the fact that there were children left behind, families left behind.
I always felt like I was the only one, you know, if they have lost someone.
Right. Mm-hmm. The people coming to us saying, I thought I was the only one, but just friends of mine or colleagues or just people out in the world saying, like, hearing about what we're doing, saying, it never even occurred to me, you know.
So there's a story up now by a woman named Paige Roll. Am I mm-hmm. pronouncing her name
yep.
correctly? Called Growing Up Positive. It's about how around age 11, she figured out that those powders her mom was mixing into her milk in the morning were antiretroviral drugs and that she had been born HIV positive. Have other people on the Recollectors talked about their own struggles with HIV?
We do have positive members, yes.
Mm-hmm.
We do have people who are positive and are activists who are out there working with ACT UP, working with Housing Works, working within their own artwork
and their own art practice.
And
that, you know, has been, I think, eye-opening for us, you know, because in like half of our lives, or, you know, talking for myself, half of my life I've felt touched by AIDS, but it wasn't until I started working on this project, it wasn't until this year that I actually met people who were born HIV positive and who are living, you know, full, successful lives,
mm-hmm.
but that they're, you know, of course it makes sense. If you know, they lost a mom to AIDS, they might have been born HIV positive, but they're sort of have been invisible.
Mm-hmm.
And even just, it, you know, wasn't part of our community that I hadn't really thought about before. So, you know, there's this diversity and the issues for them are different and more extreme even than for others of us who just lost parents, because who do I tell? You know, how transparent can I be? Who can mm-hmm. I trust? I mean, they're still really vital points.
So in a way, the Recollectors has a sort of dual mission on some level. I mean, you're not only, as you say, recollecting these stories and also giving people a forum and a platform through which they can explore their own histories and their own relationships to their parents and their own situations currently in terms of that history. But you're also, in a way, doing something to break down a lot of stigma that happens. People don't fully understand or don't fully recognize that AIDS and HIV are things that affect people regardless of where they are, who they are,
mm-hmm.
how much money they
right.
have, all of this.
Right.
Yeah, we really see it as activism through storytelling and through visibility, because, you know, so many of these parents died, you know, with sometimes lies in their obituaries saying that they died of cancer instead of AIDS, or, you know, mm-hmm. they died with the children remaining, you know, feeling that they couldn't be open. And so just to come forward and say, this happened to me, this is how, you know, this is a picture of my family, and to, you know, to bear witness to those stories is to reject the stigma and the secrecy and also just make that history more alive.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah.
I've been speaking with Whitney Joyner and Alicia Abbott. They created The Recollectors, a storytelling site and online community for the children of parents who died of AIDS. You can find a link to their website on our show page at WNYC.org. Whitney and Alicia, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. This is wonderful.
Thank you
really
so much, Martha.
It.
Thank you.